Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast. We're online at soundcheck.org.
Three, that's a magic number.
Three.
Yes, it is. It's the magic number.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and joining us for today's Pick 3 playlist is the author Francine Prose. Her new book is called Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris, 1932. It is a jam-packed story about good and evil, love gone bad, race cars, Hitler, Picasso, photography, bad cops, crazy escapes, and one very troubled woman. Francine Prose, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So this story of yours is told kind of Rashomon style by five different narrators, all revolving around this place, the Chameleon Club.
Mm-hmm.
That was inspired by a real club, right?
Yeah. The real club was called Le Monocle, the Monocle, and it existed in Paris in the 20s and 30s. It was a cross-dressers club. And a lot of the stuff that happened there I just made up because it was so much fun. You know, do the programming for a crossdressers club in Paris in the 30s. What could be more fun? The acts, the music, and so forth. And surprisingly, it stuck around. I mean, it lasted all the way through the war. And then I sort of lost track of it because of, you know, the book ended. But I was just reading a biography of Jane Bowles, and she used to go there in the 50s. So it was still there.
Hmm.
So
when you started writing this, did you intend it to be a work of nonfiction?
At the very beginning. I mean, I'd seen the Brassai photograph of the two women sitting in the bar. And one of the women is wearing a spangly evening dress. The other is cross-dresser in a tuxedo. And what I found out...
And then this was actually taken at that club, the
Monocle.
This
was taken at that club, yeah. And what I found out was that the woman in the tuxedo, all I knew from the wall text at the photo show, had gone to work for the Gestapo when France was occupied by the Nazis. So I went online and I did the research, and it turned out what I could find out, her real name was Violette Morris. She'd been a professional athlete, shot putter, race car driver. And in 1935, the French government took away her license to compete professionally because she was a crossdresser, which turned out to be in violation of the Napoleonic Code. Who knew why? And Hitler found out about it and invited her to be his special guest at the 36th Berlin Olympics. She went to the Berlin Olympics as Hitler's guest. By the time she got back to France, she was not only spying for the Germans, but she told them where the Maginot Line ended. She did go to
that's
work.
Where that's the fortified line.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
There to
I mean, of course,
France.
Anyone could have told them where the Maginot Line, but she gets credit.
But she's the one who did it.
And then she did go to work for the Gestapo, and she was assassinated by the resistance in 1944. So I had that was all I could find out, and those were the dots that
that's
I had.
That's a lot.
Get.
That's a lot to find out.
I know, and again, you know, you can't make this stuff up. So I just had to connect those dots. So the novel came out of my efforts to make those things hook up.
And the real character of Violette Morris mm-hmm. becomes the fictional character of Lou Villar.
Yeah.
So in your research into the time and the period, how much listening did you do to the music that would have been heard in a club like this?
I downloaded several CDs of French cabaret music from the time. Now, some of it you can listen to and it's still great. I mean, Edith Piaf, of course, is still fantastic. And some of it is pretty hard to listen to because that super nasal vocal style
yeah,
of the time,
yeah, yeah.
It really, I mean, that was the style. But you listen to it now and there's something kind of grating and weird about it. So, you know.
Now, Piaf, you know, would have been sort of towards the latter part of this period.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the first song that you've chosen for us in your playlist is Mon Légionnaire, which is from the mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, the clouds are already darkening over Europe.
The clouds are darkening. And also Mon Légionnaire, I mean, there are other Edith Piaf songs that I like a lot better and that everyone likes a lot better. But Mon Légionnaire has a slightly nationalistic tinge to it, and so much of the music at that time became nationalistic or was divided up by so-called patriotism and so forth. So that was a very popular song at the time when France was becoming more and more nationalistic.
Let's hear it from the great French chanteuse Edith Piaf.
Il avait de grands yeux très clairs où parfois passaient des éclairs comme au ciel passent des orages. Il avait plein de tatouages que j'ai jamais très bien compris. Son coup portait à vue pas pris. Sur son cœur on lisait personne, sur son bras droit un mot. raison. Je sais pas son nom, je ne sais rien de lui. Il m'a aimé toute la nuit, mon légionnaire. Et me laissant à mon destin, il est parti dans le matin, plein de lumière. Il était mince, il était beau, il sentait bon le sable chaud. Mon légionnaire.
From the great French singer Edith Piaf, a song called Mon Légionnaire, chosen for us by the author Francine Prose. Her new book is called Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris 1932, an epic kind of look back at a place and time, sort of like Weimar Germany, where people, Francine, are almost willfully blinkered in mm-hmm. their view of their world and their place in it, at, you know, to the exclusion of what's really on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're having a good time until everything comes crashing down around you. Wasn't that Piaf song beautiful? I mean, she was like Nina Simone in a way. You know, everything she sang, she just owned it. So.
Yeah. And kind of curious, the trumpet playing in the background, almost like a parody of a patriotic song.
I know. Well, I think there was a certain amount of saluting involved, too. So.
Now, Edith Piaf does not appear in your book, at least not... You know,
directly. There's a reference to her. I mean, I do have a music hall singer who is a real right-wing maniac. And at some point, one of the narratives says, you know, she would hardly allow Edith Piaf on because she wanted to be the center of attention all the time. But no, she doesn't actually appear.
But Picasso does.
Picasso does.
Hitler does.
And Hitler does.
In a very unusual scene. And then there are thinly veiled versions of... One of the narrators is a kind of Henry Miller. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Hungarian photographer Brassai. Mm-hmm. One of the first narrator we meet is his alter ego. So, you know, the line between fantasy and fact here seems to be kind of intentionally blurry.
Mm-hmm.
How much are we supposed to be trying to parse that as readers?
Well, I just used as much as I absolutely had to from fact to make it believable. But there are certain things, you know, I did do a certain amount of research. And for example, there's a dinner party with Hitler scene. And there's a book that exists called Hitler's Table Talk. And Bormann, I mean, it's almost unreadable. It's so boring. Bormann wrote down everything that Hitler said at dinner for years. And it's 800 pages long. And Hitler went on at great length about his dietary preferences and his health and nutrition ideas. So I just was able to kind of take that directly and put it into the novel.
Right. What about, you know, there are various what look to be quotes of songs that are being performed at mm-hmm. the club, at the Chameleon Club, which when we looked them up online, we didn't get anything. So were you making up songs?
I was making up songs. There's one that's real. There's one called Madame la Marquise, and it's a woman who calls, who keeps calling home, and they keep saying, everything's fine, madame, but your house is burned down, your stable's burned down, your horses are dead, your husband committed suicide, but everything's fine.
But everything's fine.
And that's supposed to be a sort of parody or a comment on the time in which they were living. Everything's fine, except the house is burning down, the husband's dead, you know, everything's
right.
falling apart, but everything's fine.
So Hitler just invaded Poland, but you go ahead right. and finish that champagne.
Right,
everything's
exactly.
fine. Did you have something, I mean, when you were making up these songs, were you hearing them in your mind? Did you...
Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. I mean, again, it was so much fun. I was making up the acts at this club. I mean, a friend sent me a clip of a three contortionist sisters from the 40s, like 50s maybe, and doing some song called, like, Solid Cold Potatoes. I can't remember. I mean, really crazy contortionist stuff. And I just took that and transposed it back to make one of the main acts be a bunch of quartet contortionists. But, you know, I did this kind of undersea act that runs all the way through this Neptune and a mermaid and a sailor, mm-hmm. a Little Mermaid act. And those were all made up. And again, how much fun, you know, just make up a bunch of cross-dressers, huge routines.
Well, now, one of your previous novels was made into a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Could somebody make this into a musical? And if so, would you be there saying, no, the song has to sound like this?
Well, I mean, I don't know about it. I mean, musicals, I mean, I love the musical they made of my novel, but musicals per se, make me kind of nervous. You know, I always get sort of anxious when the characters start singing. But I don't know how you could do a movie of this without there being music in it, since so much of it takes place in a music hall.
So The Glorious Ones is the novel that was it was off-Broadway for a while. Francine Prose, her latest novel is called Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris 1932, and she's sharing her Pick 3 playlist with us on Soundcheck today. Very famous song on your Pick 3, which is Maurice Chevalier's Thank Heaven for Little Girls. Now, this is later than the activity taking place in the novel. Is there a connection here?
Well, it's much later, but Chevalier was one of the many entertainers who had a slightly sketchy history of not exactly collaboration, but kept on more or less performing during the occupation, certainly did not come out against the occupiers, certainly. I mean, unlike, for example, Josephine Baker, who was working for the resistance, he definitely was not. So right after the war, he was in mild disgrace for a while, and then that's kind of cleared up in time for him to sing Thank Heaven for Little Girls in Gigi, the movie.
Here it is. It's on Francine Prose's Pick 3 playlist for us today on Soundcheck.
Each time I see a little girl of 5 or 6 or 7, I can't resist a joyous urge to smile and say thank heaven for little girls. For little girls get bigger every day. Thank heaven for little girls. They grow up in the most delightful way. Those little eyes so helpless and appealing, one day will flash and send you crashing through the ceiling. Thank heaven for little girls. Thank heaven for them all, no matter where, no matter who. Without them, what would little boys do?
Well, thank heaven I don't have to hear any more of that.
It's a song you can imagine being sung by Humbert and Lolita.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? I know, a little hymn to pedophilia.
Francine Prose, that song is all kinds of wrong.
It's so terrible. I know.
But you picked it.
I picked it. I mean, it was not a song I was listening to writing the book, but it was something about the sketchy, skeezy moral quality of the time that I wanted to get in there.
Yeah. You know, the filmmaker Miyazaki, you know, recently retired, or so he claims. One of the things I've always loved about his films is he seems to love all of his characters, even the ostensibly bad ones. Mm-hmm. And people have sort of been reacting to the characters in this book the same way, that you seem to have a lot of sympathy, even for this central figure who is kind of transformed and twisted by her own life. I find it hard to listen to a song like that and find a lot of sympathy.
I know, I know. I know. Well, I'd have to write about it at great length, which I'm not going to do.
So do you listen to music when you're writing?
I do, I do. I can only listen to classical music, and preferably without words. Words are a problem.
Right.
So, and you know, it's their words versus my words. But I can listen. I listen a lot to Bach and Handel when I'm working. There's something about the and actually in those cases, I can listen to the oratorios and the St. Matthew Passion, partly because I know the pieces so well that I'm only listening partly. It's just partly kind of filling the room in my head with pleasant sounds.
Mm. But for this book, would you have been listening to that, you know, CD of old French chansons from the 20s and 30s?
When I was taking breaks, yeah.
Okay, right. But you couldn't actually write
when
while
I was actually writing,
that.
No. But when I was thinking about it, I was listening to it because I wanted, you know, I was trying to imagine myself back into that time and imagine, you know, I was looking at photographs, I was looking at clips on YouTube, and I was listening to the music just trying to get myself out of my study and into that other world.
And do you need to be in each character's head? I mean, especially in this book where you've got 5 sort of competing and at times conflicting narratives going, you know, you've got unreliable narrators and narrators whose reliability we might suspect. Are you in there in each of them?
Do you have to? That's the fun. I mean, I'm so sick of being me, you know. I mean, the great pleasure was going into my study, and I was not me. I was these other people. And, I mean, the fact that the Henry Miller character was the easiest one to write was kind of scary for, you know, my getting in touch with my inner Henry Miller.
So let me turn around the question of whether you listen to music while you write. Do you listen to music while you read? If you're just reading a book for yourself, do you have music on?
I do. Again, I prefer wordless music when I'm reading, but I do.
And mostly the classics?
Mm-hmm.
So the third piece in your pick three for us today is Beethoven, which would seem to have little connection to the book, except that there is a little kind of left turn off the narrative that takes us there.
Yeah, the only way I could write about the Violette Morris, Lou Villar character was to write about her through constructing a kind of bogus biography of her being written by a highly neurotic French high school teacher. A friend of mine said when he read that section, he could see the nicotine stains between her fingers, which made me so happy. Anyway, at some point, as the story gets darker and darker, as Lou's story gets darker, the biographer has more and more trouble, A, not talking about herself and her own problems, and B, dealing with the material. So at one point she says every time she starts writing, she hears the sound of a stone falling down a well. So she goes to a psychiatrist. First she goes to a neurologist who says there's nothing wrong with her. And then she goes to a psychiatrist who suggests that she listen to Beethoven's late quartets, which actually got into the novel because I was listening to it. I mean, that was sort of backwards. I had been listening to it. I mean, I was obsessed with the late quartets for about 3 months while I was working. It just so, you know, I knew them before, but I became obsessed. So it was a way of listening to it and working into the novel and not having to stop listening to it because I was working it into the novel.
And with perhaps one really notable exception, the Holy Prayer of Convalescence, or however you want to translate that, the late quartets of Beethoven are full of Sturm und Drang.
I know, and dark, dark, dark.
Yeah. So which one did you pick for us?
I picked number 15.
So the Beethoven String Quartet, number 15 in A minor. We have a recording here by the Belsea Quartet. And that'll wrap up Francine Prose's pick three. She's the author of the new book, Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris, 1932. It is out now. And Francine, it's been a lot of fun kind of weaving music in amongst the many threads of this book.
Thank you so much. It was great fun.
The Soundcheck podcast is supported by people just like you. Make a contribution or become a monthly sustainer. Just go to soundcheck.org and click on support. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer.